This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hey, it's Rich. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of the Zioli Show. Do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, and tell your friends. Either that or I'll leave to become President Trump's chief of staff. Thanks for listening.
Rich Zioli Show Podcast.
As we're all questioning whether or not there'll be another government shutdown this week, the president goes to the border. The governor of Virginia sticks his foot in his mouth once again. And over in New Jersey, the governor of New Jersey makes people sign confidentiality agreements. Now, first of all, I want to share with you now, this is Mick Mulvaney. He's the White House chief of staff. He's a super smart guy. He's a guy who gets it. And I'm very glad he's there. I think most people would be glad that Mick Mulvaney's there. He was discussing the shutdown and discussing the negotiations that are ongoing. Cut number nine.
We cannot definitively rule out a government shutdown at the end of this week.
You absolutely cannot, and here's why.
Okay.
Let's say, for sake of this discussion, that the Democrats prevail and the hardcore left-wing Democrats prevail. It was a Democrat congresswoman who put out a tweet yesterday about $0 for DHS. So let's say that the hardcore left-wing of the Democrat Party prevails in this negotiation, and they put a bill on the president's desk with, say, zero money for the wall. $800 million, some absurdly low number. How does he sign that? He cannot in good faith sign that. It takes a presidential signature for the spending bill.
But can you imagine Senate Republicans would go along with a proposal like that? Are you that skeptical of Senate Republicans?
I don't think so, but you asked me a question. Yeah. Is a shutdown entirely off the table? The answer is no.
Now, Chuck Todd asking the question, and he can't even understand one fundamental point. Donald Trump is never going to take anything off the table. Never. By the way, this is one of the things about the president you have to understand. As a negotiator, he's never going to take things off the table, ever. I remember this. I remember when Chris Wallace was asking him, I guess it was 2015, about nuclear weapons or something, using nuclear weapons. He said, I'm not going to take those off the table either. Why would I? Why would I take anything off the table ever? It's just how he operates, and he makes people believe he's unpredictable. And that's part of what I think has helped him get where he is in life. In fact, the reason why I did not think strategically it was a good move to even open the government was because it makes them think that at some point you will. I'd rather you just not and then make them think that you never will and then make them come around. But again, it's the unpredictability factor of it, which is something that guys like Chuck Todd just cannot understand about the president. And so they act like they get giddy over it. Much like how when you think about all these issues of the day today and you think about the 2020 election and this Green New Deal, which is one of the most politically stupid, horribly rolled out campaign ideas I've ever heard in my life. It's theatrical. It's a joke. It's stupid. Makes no sense. And yet you see how many Democrats are jumping on board with the Green New Deal, which, as I said last week, it's not about the environment. It's about their progressive utopian agenda. It's not about actually climate change. It's under the guise of climate change. They use climate change as an excuse to further the gigantic welfare state creation, to destroy capitalism, and to ensure equality of outcome for everybody. Like, we're for equality of opportunity. They want equality of outcome, meaning that whether you want a job or don't want a job, you still get a paycheck. For example, it's an example of that. Well, MSNBC's Katie Turr ratcheting up the drama of the Green New Deal and why it's so important here, why the Green New Deal is so incredibly important.
I think you have some real reporting out there from experts, not just analysts on television, but from actual experts at the UN, from the Donald Trump's own administration, saying how dire this is. The UN said we have 12 years before complete disaster. You talked to the representative of the Marshall Islands, and he's calling it what could amount to genocide if we allow things to go as they are. The reports aren't just, hey, it's going to get bad. The reports are people will die. Millions and millions and millions of people will die. And I think that there is an appetite.
Everyone's going to die. Everyone is going to die. Not just millions and millions, but billions. Billions. Actually, now that I think about it, there was a movie made called Superman Returns. Does anybody remember this movie?
Of course.
Brandon Routh played Superman. Yeah. And Kevin Spacey, when he wasn't trying to touch the little boys who were working on the show, the movie, the producers, Kevin Spacey with the worst Lex Luthor.
The worst.
Ever. One of the worst, I should say. In that movie, somebody says to him, Lex, but millions of people will die. And he goes, billions. We may have to add that clip to Katie Turr's hysteria here. Hysteria.
Millions and millions and millions of people will die. And I think that there is an appetite among voters out there, especially Democratic voters and potentially swing voters, to say, hey, let's do something about this now because it's going to affect our future. And there's real economic damage that can happen as well. Billions of dollars in economic damage from crops to deaths to losing oceanfront homes and businesses in over the next century.
Real quick, just to push back, because the 2020 election won't just be about this Green New Deal. It'll be about the whole kit and caboodle.
We don't want the kit and caboodle to be affected. Because if you affect the kit and caboodle, you've got real problems here, okay? I don't know about you. I'm fine with millions and millions and millions of people dying. I do not want the kit and caboodle affected. Yes. And then, of course, we have now Kamala Harris, who's running for president of the United States. She takes on questions about her blackness. Because with the left, it's all about identity politics, you see, and so now you have to atone for if you don't do what they all say is what's appropriate for somebody who's black. So she does an interview with the Breakfast Club hosts DJ Envy and Charlemagne the God, is that right? Am
yes.
I saying that right?
Yes.
By the way, I'll be filling in for them this Thursday morning.
The God.
Hey, it's Rich Dilley here for DJ Envy and Charlemagne the God. Excited for that.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be epic. Take a listen.
So I was born in Oakland.
Yeah.
and raised in the United States, except for the years that I was in high school in Montreal, Canada. And look, this is the same thing they did to Barack.
Yes.
This is not new to us. And so I think that we know what they're trying to do. They're trying to do what has been happening over the last 2 years, which is powerful voices trying to sow hate and division among us. Mm-hmm. And so we need to recognize when we're being played.
Okay, then. There you go. She had to atone for the fact that she married a white guy. But she said in her defense she had an affair with a black guy, so there's that. So, you know what I mean? And so, yes, I married a white guy, but I cheated on him with a black guy, so it really evens out. That was Mayor Willie Brown of San Francisco. Very famous right there. I don't know if she said it that way, in that effect, but can you imagine if they scripted that for her? Can you answer for the fact, Senator, that you married a white man, for example? I did. But I like cheating with black men. So does that even everything out for you?
The whole's forgiven.
We live in such strange times. I got to be honest with you. It's hard to keep up with the nonsense that's going on here. You have a Democrat today who's apologizing, but not really apologizing for anti-Semitism. You have an idiot governor, Democrat. You have an idiot governor of Virginia, Democrat, who doesn't understand why at his age, he has to learn why blackface is bad. And then he messes up slavery now. And part of what the anti-Semitic congresswoman said about she has to learn. She's learning, too, as she goes on to bash AIPAC also for the Jewish money that's controlling everything. The governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, he also has to learn now, too. We have a number of clips here. I want to play this for you here. This is, first of all, a little montage of Gayle King trying to redeem Governor Northam from the blackface scandal. Thanks to our friends at Grabian, Cut 5B.
What did you make of the governor's explanation?
Well, the interview was at 7 o'clock, and he was there ready to go. We were in his house, of course. He was there ready to go, and he was on time.
He admits to us he struggled in his initial response to that photograph on his yearbook page. Northam now says this is a teaching moment for himself and the country.
And he clearly is very anguished by this whole situation. I didn't feel that he was spinning a story. I think he's anguished. I think he's very sincere. And I think that he's hoping that once voters and viewers hear his story, that they will reconsider the calls for his resignation.
What have you learned that you didn't know before?
Well, several things, starting with I was born in white privilege.
Right. You know, I have to say, when I was talking to him, I did not feel that he was disingenuous or that he was trying to spin a story. He knows that he has a
lot of questions to answer, you know that. But more than half of black Virginians do not think that he needs to step down.
Wouldn't you have preferred to have this unique opportunity another way?
I would, but again, I really do believe that things happen for a reason. I am a faithful person, and
it's a very interesting time for the governor, because what I walked away feeling is that he so wants to make this right. And I talked to many black people and white people in Virginia who say he has a lot of support in the state of Virginia, who say, give look at his history, look what he's done. No one, the people I talked to do not believe that he's racist. They think that it was a stupid thing, but they do not think that he's a racist person.
Gail, it was such a good interview. And I think what you did, it was try and broaden the lens.
Yes.
Give us
yes.
more context yes. behind when we judge people very quickly and give a larger scope of this. His career includes working as a pediatric neurologist, visiting the homes of hundreds of African American families in crisis. He went to an integrated school. His parents could have sent him to a private all-white school, as the New York Times points out today. We have to view this in context and what we can learn from it.
Yeah, no question he's had some missteps, but I saw an interesting article over the weekend, guys, where it said, is there anybody out there that can't say they did something stupid in their 20s or in their 30s?
Oh, there you go. That's unbiased journalist Gail King with the Unbiased Morning Team at CBS News.
Oh, my God.
You can really feel the unbiasedness just right up the middle right there. Oh. I mean, who among us hasn't done something stupid, right?
Oh, No. That's like a whole different level. No.
Now,
I'm just sitting here thinking, are you kidding me? The length of time that when you look at that picture, how long it took to put all of that, whatever he used to put all over his face.
Shoe polish, I believe.
That's a lot of shoe polish. That took a long time.
So it might have been latex paint. I forget.
Oh, my goodness. No.
Yeah.
I reject that premise. I'm sorry.
And don't you love how they just normalize and humanize this guy? Like, he's just one of us. You know what I mean? His parents could have sent him to an all-white school. Well, then praise his parents. Don't praise him. What do you have to do with it? This is the question here about slavery, okay? The governor, the idiot governor now, who's the governor of Virginia. Now, whether or not you're a student of history or not, couple things to know. Virginia played a really big role in the Civil War. Like a really super duper big role in the Civil War and slavery. And Virginia was kind of the epicenter of it. I'll give an example. Imagine if Virginia at one point was the capital of the Confederacy. Or imagine if at one point Virginia was a slave state where a guy tried to assassinate President Lincoln over the fact of never being anything but a slave state, for example, right? That's Virginia. Now, he's the governor of Virginia. So you'd think he'd know the history of slavery, but he actually has to go to a class now on this. Take a listen.
I know this has been a very difficult week for you in the state of Virginia. So where would you like to
begin? Yes, you've had a very tough week, governor. It's been so hard on you.
Where would you like to begin?
You're so brave. So unbiased, Dawn. In unbiased journalist school, that's the first thing they ask you, they teach you, right? Where would you like to begin?
That was your talking point.
Where would you like to be?
Where would you...
Oh, God. Ray C on Twitter. I'm laughing inside right now over this. You know, Gail, I was actually born a poor black child.
Beautiful reference.
Beautiful reference. The Jerk with Steve Martin, one of the funniest movies.
Phone books are here.
So the opening question is, I know you've had a tough week having to go out there and talk about your blackface days. So where would you like to begin?
I know this has been a very difficult week for you in the state of Virginia. So where would you like to begin?
Well, it has been a difficult week. And you know, if you look at Virginia's history, we're now at the 400-year anniversary. Just 90 miles from here in 1619, the first indentured servants from Africa landed on our shores in Old Point Comfort, what we call now Fort Monroe. And while...
Also known as slavery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, while we have made a lot of progress...
Yes, Gail, I don't want to get in on the synonyms and the thesaurus and whatnot. The first round of butlers landed on our shores in 1619. And also known as... Also known as... Oh, a.k.a. Okay. Obviously, we're only just getting started with this nonsense. There is a gigantic double standard on how Democrats are treated versus Republicans. There's also a gigantic effort right now to humanize Ralph Northam after his comments last week regarding abortion, post-abortion, what many have called infanticide, what many have called murder, et cetera, et cetera. There is a giant effort to humanize him. You notice Gayle King doesn't ask about any of that stuff. Well, that's on purpose, of course. And so part of the reason why they want you to like Northam is because they all want him to survive his term, his full term. They want him to survive his full term, so by that they bring him on the show and try to make him seem likable. But he's such an idiot that he keeps stepping in it and putting his own foot in his mouth. But let's face it, the fact is that Ralph Northam is there because they all want him to make it, because they feel like he was, you know, they beat him up over his stance on late-term abortion and post-birth abortion. And so they're trying to rehabilitate this guy. And they do their thing on the media, which is to ignore all that stuff and just focus on the blackface stuff. Right? But even that, he can't help but make an entire fool out of himself, because he's just a fool. The guy's a fool. But now this is what I mean in terms of the double standard of Republicans and Democrats. Could you imagine if a Republican governor had said indentured servants landing on the shores of Virginia? Okay, now forget the fact of the, because all day today there have been several people going, well, technically correct, blah blah blah. You don't say that. You just don't talk about indentured servants landing on the shores of Virginia when you're talking about slavery, right? So whether or not when they first got here they were volunteers or not, or they came willingly or not, that didn't last too long until people were taken in chains and brought to this country and then were slaves, right? That's what he's talking about. And what I love is how many people are spinning for him on the left and in the media going, well, technically he's correct. Technically. Okay. Do you think if he were a Republican who said that, they would be offering the same, well, technically speaking, the very first ones were indentured servants? Does anybody believe that? Does anybody believe that if Ralph Northam were a Republican, they would explain to people, well, technically he's right. Now, this is what I mean now. So Gayle King asks him about slavery. He says this, and you've got to listen to the spin on this. It's amazing. Go ahead.
I know this has been a very difficult week for you in the state of Virginia. So where would you like to begin?
Well, it has been a difficult week. And, you know, if you look at Virginia's history, we're now at the 400-year anniversary, just 90 miles from here. In 1619, the first indentured servants from Africa landed on our shores in Old Point Comfort, what we call now Fort Monroe. And while
also known as slavery.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, while we have made a lot of progress in Virginia, slavery has ended. Schools have been desegregated. We have ended the Jim Crow laws, easier access to voting. It is abundantly clear that we still have a lot of work to do. And I really think this week raised a level of awareness in the Commonwealth and in this country that we haven't seen certainly in my lifetime.
Now, to be clear, the Democrats did not end slavery. That was the Republicans. But they're not going to bring that up. So we'll just sort of just ignore that. So then the speech is over. His little thing is over now. The rehabilitation tour. Now they have the post-interview panel, which consists of Norm O'Donnell, Gayle King, Brianna Golodryga, and the other guy. And they all sit around and they chat about the interview. Now, if you want to understand media bias and why this is not a cliche when people talk about it, you have to look no further than this little chit chat here. Cut five.
Now, in part of our interview with the governor that aired yesterday, he used the term indentured servants instead of slaves to refer to the African captives who arrived in Virginia back in 1619. In a statement, he told us this morning that during a recent event at Fort Monroe, I spoke about the arrival of the first Africans in Virginia and referred to them in my remarks as enslaved. An historian advised me that the use of indentured was more historically accurate. The fact is, I'm still learning and committed to getting it right. You know, I have to say, when I was talking to him, I did not feel that he was disingenuous or that he was trying to spin a story. He knows that he has a lot of questions to answer. You know, that he's getting hammered for the statements about saying indentured. And I think he talked to an historian, and that's what he was told, that that was a more historically accurate way to say it. But, you know, when he said that, you know, it made me wince a little bit, because the bottom line is it's still slavery, and we all agree on that, including the governor. He agrees with that, too.
Yeah, indentured servitude is different than slavery.
Yes.
Much
yes,
different,
yes.
Which is that many Europeans came to this country saying they would work for 7 years and then would be freed. That is different than what was enacted into law in Virginia in 1640, which was the slavery laws.
Maybe this is an opportunity for history teachers across the country teach another course
exactly
on this
right.
specific
exactly
issue.
Right.
Exactly right. It's the fault of the history teachers that Ralph Northam said that. It's the fault of the history teachers. So they're actually giving this guy a pass. Now, I want to ask you an honest question. If a Republican had said indentured servants came here from Africa, how would they have reacted, do you think, in the post panel?
In my opinion, those same people right there that were just explaining what they Google searched
right.
would have been flipping out.
Flipping the hell out.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
I'm sorry to say that, but I mean, I'm looking it up. There, you know, it goes through 1607. The first indentured servants were Europeans, and then it switched over, and it was slavery. He just got it wrong.
So imagine if Donald Trump had called indentured servants. Just imagine that for a moment.
Imagine.
Can anybody imagine the epic meltdown that would be happening right
it would
now?
Be a meltdown.
There'd be calls for him to resign.
You're right.
Right. There would be absolute people saying that he's a racist. He can't go on as imagine this. Okay, a little fun game for you at home. Imagine if Donald Trump had worn blackface to do the moonwalk and had called slaves indentured servants. And then explained it away by saying, well, technically, historically speaking, blah, blah, blah. Do you think the panel of Gail and the other guy and Brianna and Nora would be sitting around? Well,
nope.
Well, technically, the president's right. I mean, technically, a historian says it. Well, maybe this is a teachable moment. And, oh, maybe we should have a high school. Maybe history teachers really need to get their act together. And maybe it's on them. Can anyone see that happening? No, not so much. Not
Here
so much.
This is an opportunity for history teachers across the country to teach another course
exactly
this
right.
specific
exactly
issue.
Right. You can see more of our interview with Governor Northam on the
scene. Exactly right.
And don't you love, too, how, yes, he went to an integrated school in the 1980s.
Yeah, you're right. It'd be different. Yeah,
it's not 1964.
He is so incredibly dumb. He's so dumb.
Well, to me, the question that would stand out if I were, if I were interviewing him, the question would be about apathy. In other words, if you look at the story where he talks about a born child, a born baby, and then you look at the story with blackface and, well, it wasn't that time, aren't we really talking about a person who's a physician who does he completely lack empathy just for the human, just for human beings of all, you know what I mean? Like whether you're a baby or whatever your ethnicity. To me, it's an issue of apathy that he has and had in his life.
Yeah, bedside manner, you could call it.
Exactly.
Since he's a doctor, right?
Right.
But they don't even bring that up. Gail doesn't even bring that up. This is what they're purposely now trying to humanize Ralph Northam to make him seem like just a regular old guy, like just a normal guy.
He's a physician, like you're saying. He went to medical school. He is a highly educated person, and usually doctors and physicians, in my experience, are highly empathetic people.
And so, as part of this rehabilitation tour, which they're all openly parting into. They're now going after, but he still steps in it. He can't help himself.
Yeah.
And then, of course, now comes the blaming of Trump for what happened in Virginia. This is Democrat Congresswoman Nanette Barragan of California, who was on a CNN panel on Sunday. They're discussing now what was going on with Ralph Northam in Virginia and the attorney general, who also wore blackface. And this is what she said. Cut 7.
Race issue in today's day and age with the president at the helm, who has been one of the most divisive presidents and frankly racist himself, is a conversation we do need to have. But looking at just the line of order and saying, no, we're not going to do that because of the consequences, it's not the right way to do this. And so for me, I do think we need to have this conversation, and we should continue to have this conversation. It has to be front and center, and we can't forget about the person who is dividing us and who himself is injecting this into the country to live up again and coming out again. And we haven't seen it be this bad in recent time till the president has really made this a race issue, whether it's about African-Americans. Certainly, he's doing it all over the board with immigrants, but we need to have this conversation.
See? It was actually Trump's fault, not Northam's fault. So remember, they purposely now try to ignore the comments about abortion and everything else. Then they try to give the guy a chance to be humanized about the wearing of the blackface. Then they spin for him when he messes up the slavery answer. This is what this is what I mean in terms of the difference between Democrats and Republicans. Because like we said, if you found out, who's a Republican governor in this country? Are there any left? Who's there? Who's out there? I can't even think. Okay, let's say it was the guy in Florida who won, okay. Who's terrific, right?
Florida.
Scott.
No, he left. Scott. It's the new guy.
Gosh. Sorry.
Whose name escapes me right now, who's great. And I'm having a senior moment, even though I'm not a senior yet, but I should be. Anyway, imagine it was him. I'm sorry?
DeSantis.
Yeah, DeSantis. Thank you. Matt DeSantis, the governor of Florida. Matt!
Well, that's what I was thinking about, our Matt, and I thought I'm thinking wrong because it's...
No, it's Ron DeSantis, yeah. But Matt DeSantis is our other producer. He's the lesser Dan, and so... this is what I mean in terms of the double standard. Just imagine. Imagine if that guy had to confess to wearing blackface and called slavery indentured servants. I just have a hard time believing that the panel on CBS and all these other shows would be splaining for him. You know what I mean?
Well, no, he was the one, remember, ran against Gillum, an mm-hmm. African-American man. Wasn't he the one, he said something about monkeying around or
yes.
something, and they were trying to paint him as yes. a racist person.
He said he's not going to monkey around with the economy. And that led to him being a racist, making that joke, right? The monkeying around line. And then he had to drop out. He was a racist. Remember that? See, this
yes.
is the epitome of the double standard. This Northam thing, in my opinion, is exactly that. Are they done with the little chit-chat
yeah,
on the
that
panel?
That was the whole panel.
And then even to the point of blaming history teachers for his comments about indentured servants right. and slavery, which look, whether or not they were in fact indentured servants or not, the first boatload or something is completely irrelevant. Nobody thinks you can get away with saying that about people who came about in that time. Nobody thinks politically it's okay to give a lecture on that. You're not a history professor. You're a politician, right?
Right.
And the point is, if a Republican had said that, they'd be hammering the hell out of him. He says, and they go, well, I mean, technically speaking, the very, very first boat, there were like three guys on there who were indentured servants. But, you know, there you go. So it's just, to me, what you see with this jerk, and he is a jerk, is everything. You could do an entire class in the double standard and how Republicans and Democrats are treated in the media.
Right.
And I think this entire Northam spectacle has been just a classic example of that. They defend you. They try to rehabilitate you. They spin for you. It's truly enlightening.
It's arrogant when you look at it in the media, because if everybody just did their job, to your point, just do your job, be tough on everybody. That's your job.
As opposed to, I know you've had a tough week, so what question would you like to start with?
That's the best of this.
Well, I know you've had a tough week. What would you like to...
I know this has been a very difficult week for you in the state of Virginia, so where would you like to begin?
Yeah. Yes, and she arrived him for coming on time to the interview, which is held in his home, his own home, in the governor's mansion that the taxpayers pay for. Thank you for making it on time.
Explanation. Well, the interview was at 7 o'clock, and he was there, ready to go. We were in his house, of course. He was
wow.
ready
he had to
go.
Walk all the way down from his bedroom
at 7 o'clock.
Man, that's amazing to me.
He was on time.
Stephanie points out, yes, remember the hysteria when Mitt Romney said women in binders? Remember that?
That's
remember that?
Right.
She says, "What would have happened if a Republican had said indentured servants?"
Yes.
By the way, don't tweet me about the historical accuracy of the... It's not the point. You know as well as I do, that historical accuracy point would have no bearing if Northam was a Republican or a pro-lifer.
Right, and if he had made the point in perspective, had he said in 1607 when the first folks, you know, there were white people, Europeans first, and then African-Americans, and at first they had the same deal, and then it quickly... Had he said that in perspective, but he didn't.
I'm learning, you see. I'm taking my class... I'm taking my class now. I got to go. Gail, after this, I'm going to go read some more books so I can understand what it's like to be black in America. Because I grew up in a time of very, very big segregation, 1984.
rough times.
A much different America back then. We weren't allowed to talk to black people in public. We had different water fountains in the 1980s.
No, I don't think that's true.
You remember, Dawn, the lunch counter was exactly different in 1984.
I think that was 1984.
We had to sit at different counters back then.
I don't think that's true.
That's not true? No, Greg is in Chestnut Hill. Greg, how are you, sir?
Hello, Rick. Hey, Dawn, Greg. Yeah, I was just listening to the program. It's not only just Republican Democrat politicians. How about what they did to the Covington, the Sandman kid, when the interviewer just, like, berated him, you know, with a calm voice, but berated him, and then put on Phillips, the Native American guy, and then just directionalized him right into him being the victim.
Yes.
If you flip that script, it would be insane. They would never in a million years have that, where they would treat Sandman, the Covington kid, like they did the Native American. It's the same thing. We know it's going to happen, but they're even doing it with kids now. And if I remember, it was a much more serious event, when they had the shooting at the school, remember, you couldn't say anything about that kid or any of those kids in that school. Or right. You would have had to come out and apologize and you know, swear your firstborn to them that you really didn't mean that. It's ridiculously one-sided. It's absurd, actually. It's nuts.
You are 100% correct. It's an excellent example that you point out. And that's why I try to bring this stuff up and get into some depth with it, because I think that it's very easy to lose sight of this if you just don't take the time to dig in and expose this stuff, you know? And this is what, and by the way, this is what we're up against. We are up against a media that has a mission, a political agenda. And, you know, there are people who might say, oh, that's a cliche. No, it's not. Not when you put up these examples and you look at them.
No, if you put up the examples, all you have to do, and I don't, and I'm going to say this on either side, that wherever side you are, starting far right to far left, you put up some of these shows and you watch the panels, the CNN panel. I don't even watch MSNBC. I can't take it. I have 2 minutes and I'm ready to throw this on for the TV. The CNN panel is one buffoon after the next one. It's like the Three Stooges. When one snores and they turn over, they all turn over. So whatever they say, they get worse and worse and worse. Each one has to out-dummy the next one. And now it's so crazy, they can't even look at it objectively. There's not one objectionable thing they can look at. It's just hate, and they're wrong. Had any Republican put Kiwi shoe polish on its face, they would have been out of office. And that's the kind of shoe polish it was.
100%. 100%. Go ahead.
You know what I mean? It's obscene. And that skit you did the other day with the... And you got it. It wasn't even a skit. You got it from the man's own words when he said, when he stood and he asked if anybody else put shoe polish on the face, I almost crashed off, drove off the road.
Yeah.
I was driving somebody's furniture in a truck, and I'm like, did he just say that? And then you got on and just ripped him, which was hilarious, like Foghorn Leghorn, by the way. But anyway, it's a double standard, but it's the point. It's nauseating and it's sickening to watch a panel on TV. So
well,
that's all I had to say.
Good call, buddy. Thank you very much. Yeah, he actually, I don't know if we have this audio, he explained what he meant by that blackface thing. What did you get that one, Greg? I don't know if you got that. I didn't ask you to get it, but...
From the
Gail
King
interview, no, when he talks about why. His argument was... Because remember he said, I don't know if any of you know blackface on, how hard is it to take shoe polish off? Remember he said that?
Yes.
And I was mocking him for that, saying, is he literally asking the press corps if any of them have ever put on blackface? His excuse today was, he went to a military academy, and the shoe polish was very hard to get off. That's what he meant. He knew how hard it was to get shoe polish off because of all the times he had to shine his shoes at the military academy.
Oh my God.
And Gail King lets him go with that. She goes, oh, okay. Oh, that's what you meant. Okay, no problem. There you go. It's amazing to me. Now, you know, a couple people have sent me notes about this thing in blackface or that thing in blackface. Look, I've defended Halloween costumes from political correctness, but has the left? No. You know what I mean? I've defended people who've made comments about blackface. I've defended comedians who've done skits. I've never been one of those people. Like Sean asks me, when I was 12, I dressed as my favorite basketball player, Michael Jordan, for Halloween. Am I racist? I'm not saying Northam's racist. I'm saying the guy's an idiot. I'm saying that is it is now a declared thing in our society that if you put on blackface, it's racist. And yet he's allowed to become governor of Virginia. He's allowed to stay governor because he's a Democrat. That's it, period. And if he were a Republican, he'd be out. And I'll go a step further. It's the left that has been the ones going after actors. Remember what happened to Megyn Kelly? Megyn Kelly was out because of a joke about blackface. Remember that? Recently, by the way, out of Good Morning America. And then, because she made a comment about, I don't even think it was blackface. I think it was just about darkening her skin or something.
Yeah, she was hosting a panel and they were discussing dressing up for Halloween and
like dressing up
blackface.
As Beyonce.
Yeah,
in
and
particular.
She said that, you know, back in the day it was okay, but it's not okay now or something like that. And she lost her job because of it.
And that's what I mean in terms of this absolute double standard is just nauseating to me. Nauseating. Do you remember when Roseanne made a comment about Valerie Jarrett?
Yes.
And it was a Planet of the Apes comment?
Oh, yeah.
She lost her show.
She did.
She lost her show over that.
Yep.
So, I have a hard time with the notion of just letting this be excused. And again, at the heart of all this is they're trying to protect Northam because of his stance on late-term abortions and even post-term abortions. And that's the truth. I mean, they are trying to rehabilitate this guy because of what he said, because they want to, because they like what he said. They agree with him. They agree with what he said. That's why Gayle King didn't ask him about it. Gayle King could have asked him. You know, but what would you say to a mother in that moment? She didn't do any of that stuff. She wouldn't. So part of this all thing about making about the blackface is also to distract from that. But then getting him giving him the opportunity to humanize himself, he still makes an idiot out of himself, and they still cover for him with his comments about indentured servants. Anyway, I just, you know, it's the kind of stuff that just makes me laugh. It's like this now. MSNBC's Stephanie Ruhle bashing reports that now presidential candidate Amy Klobuchar was abusing her staff. And now this is with GOP strategist Evan Siegfried and Democrat commentator Christine Quinn. Whether women of political ambition face higher levels of scrutiny than men, cut six.
Has not.
And the whole reason these stories are coming out are because of ex-staffers of Amy Klobuchar saying it's a temperament issue.
No. Tell me examples.
And I would be saying this.
Show me example. Man. Really? Show me example.
Absolutely.
You would not.
I would absolutely. If a man threw a binder at a staffer, I absolutely would.
Every time, almost every time, a woman steps forward, all of a sudden, there are these unnamed sources, and Harry Reid is not confirmed.
For basically saying she was a bossy bitch.
Yeah!
I never heard that about Tulsi Gabbard. I never heard that about Elizabeth Warren. I didn't hear that about Kamala Harris or Kirsten Gillibrand. I didn't
it
hear that about Hillary Clinton.
It is a classic people trashed Hillary as a boss. Don't go there. That is a fact that was part of the trash campaign against her.
Democrats were?
Over and over.
What Democrats were coming forward and saying she was a terrible boss?
Any woman, you could insert so many women's names into Amy Klobuchar in that article. I'm sick and tired of it. I'm sick and tired of a man who is ambitious and moving up, being smart, strategic,
tough, strong.
And a woman is just a bitch.
Tom, give me an example of when we called a man bossy.
When we've called a man bossy?
Yeah.
We've talked about Ted Cruz. We've talked about
And we've called others. Him the word bossy?
Well, we've called him a little bit of a suck-up.
Those are two very different things. When a woman stands up and is strong and commanding, she's called bossy. When a man stands up and does the same thing, people say he's strong.
Now, ask yourself this question, too, and this is an important question to ask. When the judge who was there to become a judge, the woman who's nominated to be a judge for the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, when Mazie Hirono was going after her about dwarf tossing and was implying that she doesn't care about people, where were the MSNBC crew here defending her? That if a man had written that, you wouldn't be implying that she doesn't have feelings, that she doesn't care, that the man doesn't care. You see what I mean in terms of another classic example of a double standard. Amy Klobuchar might as well be a very, very mean person to work for. But they have to make it simply that that's just an attack on her gender. And this is the kind of stuff that they continue to do here as they cover for their own. Nancy Pelosi gets rock star treatment at Clive Davis Gala. Well, that's a calling it up the middle kind of a headline, huh?
Sure is. Rock star.
Rock star treatment. So Beto O'Rourke's a rock star. Now, Nancy Pelosi gets rock star treatment.
Man.
Okay?
Oh, God.
So there you go.
Has Donald Trump ever been, since he became president, Has he ever been called a rock star with all these like huge rallies and whatnot?
You know, it's funny. I was going to ask you if you can remember a headline that said Donald Trump gets rock star treatment.
Never.
And can I say, too, when he sold out that that Texas stadium, like that is actually what rock stars do. I don't think Nancy Pelosi is selling out rock star stadiums.
Like rock stars literally sell out stadiums.
That's what I'm saying. Like if you wanted to say one political person is a rock star, I mean, you'd have to say Donald Trump just for the simple fact that he can draw 30,000 people to a to an arena, right?
Great,
I mean,
great point.
Like,
yeah.
If that's the definition we're going for,
then there you go. But Nancy Pelosi gets rock star treatment.
The rock star treatment is there was, you know, 20 people that applauded for.
Well, that's pretty impressive, right there. 20 people.
You know, every once in a while, I do get people. I just got another email from somebody saying, what can I do? You know, you have a voice, and these things have, if you put it in writing, most sites, CNN, anybody, you can go down and make a complaint or a compliment, but they have to keep that. They have to keep that with the FCC. They have to report that.
Oh,
if you
they
have
don't
it in
care.
Writing. Well, but it has to go to the FCC. So every little bit, I just think, to me, I think
the hell's the FCC going to do?
Well, it's first of all, if he becomes...
Stop with your liberal bias.
No, if
they're going to write a note. If you stop being a liberal, don't you use your bias now.
I will tell you that there's part of it that's a shaming that if they name like an anchor person and they say, Don, you've gotten 2,000 letters that say you're really unfair. There becomes a shaming.
All right, don't give any ideas to the audience to write letters about me. All right.
Will write good things.
My hatred. My haters will do the same thing to me. Now, this is an amazing day today with this Democrat, Representative Omar. This is still building, by the way. And I should mention to you that she is not going to be thrown off her committees, apparently, unlike what happened to Steve King, Representative Steve King. Now, I opened the show with this. I spent a lot of time on this. But since then, there's been a couple of developments with this. This is a vile, vile woman who is an anti-Semite. Now, her defense here and what she said, and I'll share with you a little bit about what she said, she's still blaming AIPAC, all right? Now, the Zionist Organization of America, which is America's oldest pro-Israel group, issued a statement Monday morning denouncing the anti-Semitic statements of Representative Ilhan Omar and calling for her to be removed from her committee assignments in the U.S. House of Representatives. Now, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, the rock star, the vampiric one, has appointed her to the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Okay? She tweeted Sunday that Congress was paid to defend Israel by the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, among other Jewish leaders, and some Democrats were also outraged by this. So what she said now, she did a number of things here by saying that basically everything was about money. So now think of what the classic Jewish stereotype, right, that people say that Jewish money controls everything, the Jewish money around the world. And so as she tweeted all these things, a lot of people have said she's clearly showing her bias, her absolute hatred for Israel. The Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, said today the following: we are and always will be strong supporters of Israel in Congress because we understand that our support is based on shared values and strategic interests. But Congresswoman Omar's use of anti-Semitic tropes and prejudicial accusations about Israel's supporters is deeply offensive. We condemn those remarks and we will call upon Congresswoman Omar to immediately apologize for these hurtful comments. But they have not called on her to lose her committee assignment, which Republicans did do to Representative Steve King after he made comments that they interpreted as being pro-white supremacy. Now, today, Representative Omar, even though she was going on there and saying that Jewish money is controlling American policy, AIPAC money, that's the American-Israeli Political Action Conference, she tweeted out a very, very lame apology today, which I think is not even an apology. I think it's BS. I think it's one of those fake BS phony apologies that nobody really believes. And then after that was put out there today, she still basically then took the time to go after AIPAC anyway. For example, she wrote this: Anti-Semitism is real, and I'm grateful for Jewish allies and colleagues who are educating me on the painful history of anti-Semitic tropes. My intention is never to offend my constituents or Jewish Americans as a whole. We have to always be willing to step back and think through criticism, just as I expect people to hear me when others attack me for my identity. This is why I unequivocally apologize. At the same time, I reaffirm the problematic role of lobbyists in our politics. Whether it be AIPAC, the NRA, or the fossil fuel industry, it's gone on too long, and we must be willing to address it. So, even though she's apologizing for making comments about Jewish money, she's still saying that Jewish money is the problem, because AIPAC is a lobbying group. They only account for, by the way, a couple million dollars a year. In the big scheme of things, it's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. So she goes on to say, I'm so sorry for my anti-Semitic, the stereotypes. But let me advance the stereotype anyway and say AIPAC and their Jewish money is the reason for all this happening and controlling everything. And there's still a problem. So she's not apologizing. She is a vile anti-Semitic person. The person who came to her defense today, the other Muslim woman in Congress, also came out and bashed AIPAC today. And for them, for all of them, it's not about disagreeing with foreign policy or questioning whether or not the United States is too dependent on Israel or whether or not the United States should be in this war or that war. It's not about that. Their argument is AIPAC money is controlling Congress and controlling all these decisions, and we're all beholden to the money. Now, what does that sound like to you? Every anti-Semitic country on the planet has always used the argument of Jewish money, the banks, the corporations, the Jew bankers, the Jew this, the Jew that, controlling the decision makers. It's literally exactly what they did in Nazi Germany, 100%. And they're doing the exact same thing, these members of Congress, these Democrats. But of course, they're Democrats, so they get a pass on this stuff, amazingly enough. All right, let's do it, Greg.
Who won Twitter?
I'm going to give it to Donnie McManaman. He says, Rich, every time I turn on the radio, I feel like Rich Gioli is giving an analyst an analysis of Alice in Wonderland. Is this real life? Whack and who? Dwarf tossing?
There you go. All right. An analysis of...
Yeah, sorry. I stumbled over the word analysis.
Okay. It happens. Thank you, Flemington Furs, for sponsoring Who Won Twitter. Flemington Furs is what fabulous feels like, and it is fabulous. God Emperor Trot Float unveiled in Italy. Excuse me. Get out of the way of my bigger float. Eh?
Oh my God.
Look at that. That's freaky looking. I'm looking at it on Fox News. Yeah. God Emperor Trump Float unveiled in Italy. He's got the Twitter birds all over him. Yeah, excuse me. Your float, is it too big? Eh? Move your float.
Rich Gioli, 3 till 6. Talk Radio 1210. WPHT.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.